for Delaware State of the Arts. I'm Andy Truscott. My guest today is Eva, who is no stranger to working hard, digging deep, and crossing boundaries. She was trained as a classical soprano at Juilliard and Manhattan School of Music, but she has truly found her voice in writing and singing her own songs and is based here in Delaware. Eva, thank you so much for joining me today. As we noted, you started your musical journey with classical music, studying at Princeton University and the Juilliard School, before moving to Stockholm on a Fulbright scholarship to study the music of your ancestors. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and how you find it's influenced your music?
Thanks, Andy. That was a very intense experience being in conservatory. It was highly competitive. Only it didn't have to be, but everybody was pretty focused on doing well and did a lot of meditation to get through it. And also the demands was to be world class, obviously, because I was going to New York schools and there were people from the whole world in my class. It was tough in that we had very thorough, direct feedback on how we were doing. So I left thinking that I was not very good, only to find out later that I was pretty good. So that, thinking of the movie Tar that I saw recently, it was interesting to think about the conservatory experience and how it can sometimes be not a nurturing experience, but more of a toe the line kind of experience.
And I feel like sometimes we think of conservatories as the mandatory stepping stone, right, into a professional career. We find that it sometimes pulls people out of the field because of potentially the experience you had. Did you have that similar kind of observation while you were there?
I knew I had to go to conservatory if I wanted to be an opera singer. There's just no other way to do it unless you're Cecilia Bartoli and you're trained daily by a opera singer who is your parent. But in order to learn all of the diction and all the performance practice, it's really necessary, especially for a soprano, since there's so many of us. So I worked really hard to get into conservatory and be completely prepared. I still think it could be addressed that the point is to nurture, not to condemn. I think some of the teachers approached it with a self-righteousness and a jealousy sometimes of the students, instead of this is a really hard field and we'd like you to do well and we're doing the very best we can to help you do well. So please work with us, help us help you. And I just think that that priority check, that point of view check would have been more useful.
You find yourself also teaching now, correct?
Yes.
And so how do you think this experience that you had at conservatory has informed or influenced your coaching style?
Completely, it has, to the point that I work very hard to, with myself, to be sure I'm reminding the students of why we're here and that it's ultimately for them to enjoy their passion for music and not for me to be right and for them to be wrong, or for me to be an expert and them to be unknowledgeable in such a way that is distasteful to me. I really provide a nurturing, loving environment where I allow them to be seen and be themselves in a Mary Poppins kind of way, probably. One of my students' mom said, "You're like Mary Poppins. You make it fun, but you're also firm."
I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, once you left conservatory, how you found yourself getting onto the road, right?
Well, when I was in conservatory, I had had some chance meetings, like meeting the casting director of Conan O'Brien at the gym, who said, "We need an opera singer tomorrow. Can you do it?" And I did it. And that was a big break for me. And I kept getting invitations to do more mainstream popular forms of singing. And I just read the tea leaves and said, okay, it really feels like this is working for me. And I, moving to Sweden on the Fulbright, I did have amazing colleagues who invited me to do so much. And I did find that the Swedish teachers were absolutely lovely and very kind and nurturing. And so were the students. Swedes are just very nice people and they're focused on solidarity of a group and not so much on individualism the way we are in the States. I continued to write pop music and be making classical music and did a lot of opera auditions for big opera companies, and I was getting more yeses from writing my own music than I was from opera companies. And I thought, okay, this is something I should consider. And I didn't know I could write when I went to conservatory, and I really enjoy writing music, and I found out I had something to say.
In your career, I've found that you've successfully bridged musical genres from classical to contemporary. How do you approach as an artist writing and performing music that really crosses that line?
I worked for a while on my voice so that it really would sound like its own thing, because I knew I didn't want to do crossover in the sense that I was singing with an operatic voice on more popular sounding music. When I write the music, I would choose, if I was co-writing with people, who I would co-write with based on if I thought it would serve the kind of music I wanted to make, which was, even though it's crossover, I wanted it to be cool. I wanted it to be poppy. I wanted it to be singer-songwriter material. And I'm still working on that every day, on the writing. I think I've got the voice pretty well worked out by now, I hope. But I'm very happy with the way I'm singing these days.
Recently, you were announced as one of the Delaware Individual Artist Fellows for 2023, which is a grant from the Delaware Division of the Arts and goes towards the performance of your work. Can you share a little bit about the importance of grants or funding for artists, especially in today's climate?
Thank you for that question, Andy. That's a really important question, and that might be what the young artists want to hear about more than anything. I have funded most of my career through fundraising. I have been lucky enough to have grants when I started out, like the Fulbright grant. I had a grant from the Swedish Women's Educational Organization. I had some funding from private sponsorship. I then started using crowdfunding. Now I have a fiscal sponsor called Fractured Atlas, and people are able to donate to me tax deductibly. But all of my music and activities are funded by either grant money or my teaching revenue, as just like classical music, because now streaming is the primary way in which people consume music, it doesn't pay royalties on which an artist can live, at least an artist where I am in my career. So we have to find other ways to make the music happen. I'm never short on ideas and music, but the funding I have to find. And I do my very best to maintain a good momentum also with my music, so that when I ask for funding, people see that I'm active and say, okay, she's doing worthwhile things. I want to be a part of it. First, I was ashamed to do that. I thought, oh, I don't want to do crowdfunding. I should be able to afford to make my own music. But in order to make a record that's really of the standards that an audience expects, it takes a team, and the team costs money. And that's how it works. It's a long game being an artist. Artists' long time is fleeting. So be up and doing, still achieving, still pursuing. Longfellow said that, and I live by that. I saw it on a card when I was in college, because I have really decided, in having perspective on what it's like to be an artist, it's about an experience. And I am privileged to have the ability to have that experience by being able to make music. And whether I'm in the red or the black, I continue to be blessed to be able to make music. And I do my very best to wear out my boot leather looking for all the opportunities that can help me continue to make the music. And this is the fourth grant I think I've gotten. I've had two opportunity grants, and then this is the second individual artist grant I've gotten. And both times they have come during a record release when I'm doing a fair amount of touring. And playing out is expensive because I have a band and I pay my band. Plus, I have to pay for the transportation and the housing. So having support to be able to do that and share my music with more people, and at those shows be able to sell CDs or sell t-shirts or sell candy hearts that we made this time with the names of the songs of the album on it. It helps me get there. It helps me keep showing up for the experience. And sometimes I get disheartened. I'm not saying that it's a cakewalk. I'm not saying it's joy. I experience every single human emotion in doing what I do, but I keep in mind that I'm living the life I want to live. And I spend every moment of every day making music, doing what I've chosen to do and followed in my heart of hearts. And when I've listened to that deep inner voice telling me this is what you want to do, somehow I've landed on my feet.
I want to take just a minute here to remind our listeners that you're tuned in to News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV for Delaware State of the Arts. Eva, as you've discussed, you've played a variety of venues from the Royal Opera of Stockholm to World Cafe Live. What's your favorite kind of venue type, or what's a real key to a successful performance?
For me, my favorite venue type is where I can have a really good connection with the audience and a really good connection with my fellow musicians at the same time. So I particularly love the World Cafe because they allow people to sit down and have a meal and have something to drink and really settle in for the show. And I think that that serves my music really well because I write pretty thoughtful lyrics, so people have time to digest them. And I do also play venues where people stand for a while, and that works too. But for me, really, the magical jewel box or cabaret venues that look beautiful and have a wonderful ambiance to them, those are my favorite places to play. So Pete's Candy Store in New York, Rockwood Music Hall. I used to play a lot at the World Cafe Live at the Queen until they were bought by Live Nation and they changed their format. I do like to sing in opera houses. It was amazing to sing at the Royal Opera. I wouldn't mind doing that more as well. That's pretty special. And of course, everybody's comfortable in their plush seat for that. So I am writing an opera now, as I hope to be able to have more of that kind of a musical experience.
You had mentioned you're currently composing an opera Inside Out. I wonder if you can share a little bit about what goes into writing a piece like that and maybe your inspiration, your experience with how to do something like that.
Oh, I'm happy to share about that. I learned so much. When I first started working on the opera, it was during the lockdown of the pandemic. And I thought, well, let me just sit down in front of my Logic, which is my recording program, and see what I can come up with music-wise. And I was really happy actually with what I came up with. I was very surprised by it, very happy with it. And then I signed up for the Producers Academy that Beth Morrison Productions was putting on. And during that many weeks long program, I learned the process by which people get their operas produced, create the opera, raise the funding, what kind of contracting you need, what kind of priorities you need, how to plan the schedule, the budget. And I learned from that and from my own writing that I needed to have the words first before I could really write the opera, because I kept writing the music and realized I don't know what the plot is here. I'm not quite sure where to go now. Which is very different than writing song for song when that 3 or 4 or 5 minute song can be its own story. So I wrote a libretto. I wrote three synopses until I got a synopsis that I liked. Wrote a first draft. We did a reading of it. And then now I have brought on an actual librettist to help me, because she can help me better with the character development and the plot development. And the reason I decided to write it myself instead of have a librettist write it in the first place, which many people do, is because it's about my experience as a victim of domestic abuse. And that story is very personal to me and has its own nuances. And I wanted to be able to tell that story in a way that honored my feelings and my experience. And I felt that if I did that, I would feel more in line with the piece. And then other people who've had the same experience with whom I plan to and continue to share this opera could also connect to that authentic vibration of this happened to me and this flavor of this happening. And I've already noticed when I speak to other people who've experienced the same thing, they say, oh God, that happened to me, but it happened a little bit like this, or this is how we came together. But just being able to share those stories openly is very healing. Because when it first happened to me, I hid out because I thought I must be some special kind of loser to deserve what was happening to me. And when I finally came out of hiding and shared it with other people, I realized so many people have gone through this. And especially when I shared it with Beth Morrison Productions that this is what I wanted to write about, it was the first time I really told anybody, and I was so afraid. And they just took it in stride, and everybody in the cohort said, okay, wonderful. Okay, how are we going to handle this? This is very good. And they were so respectful and caring about it. And that made a huge difference.
Have you had any public or private readings or listenings of this work?
Oh, there is some work samples of it on my SoundCloud page, which is Eva Voice, SoundCloud.com/IVAVOICE. And we are doing a second public reading of the revised libretto from Brooklyn Music School on May 21st. So if anyone listening to this is interested, please come to my website and sign up for our mailing list on evavoice.com. And I will be sure to send you information of how you can either come in person to Brooklyn Music School or you can zoom in to the reading.
I do want to give us just a moment here before we wrap up to share that you'll be performing tonight in Wayne, PA. And
Yes.
so if you could tell us a little bit details and potentially if anyone's listening and can make it, they can come see you live and in person.
Yes, if you'd like to come and hear the band live, it'll be all my original pop music, singer-songwriter material, and it's at 118 North in Wayne. The show starts at 7. I have Strawberry Runners opening for me, a gorgeous singer-songwriter, and then my full band and I go on at 8. And if you'd like any more information, we have a new record out, which is called Nobody's Woman, which you can get on all streaming platforms. Come to my website to learn more about that and to listen. So please come to our show. And also, please give Eva a follow on Spotify. It makes a huge difference for us in being added to their editorial playlists, which are very important for exposure. And if you'd like to buy the record, Nobody's Woman, please come to Bandcamp, which is also Eva Voice. And there you can buy it either for the suggested amount or if you feel like you'd like to support the cause more, please make a larger donation and you'll have a beautiful record coming to you downloadable with all the album credits and artwork and stories. And I think you really enjoy it.
Eva, my last question as we wrap up. For you personally, what does success look like? You know, if you were to think back 10 years, what did success look like then? What does it look like now? And where do you think you've learned along the way?
That is a brilliant question. Thank you for asking that. I think success is a feeling and not a future magical place to which one aspires. And I wish I could feel that way all the time. I'm always wanting to do more. And you're reminding me now that moments like this, where I'm able to share my story and connect with you and other listeners, that in my mind is success. That's the experience of sharing in such a way that other people can also connect. If we all lived like that, and I hope I can hold myself to that mentality, we'd live in a even better world.
Eva, thank you so much for joining me today. As she has mentioned, to learn more or to see what's coming up for both Eva and her band, visit their website at IVAvoice.com.
Yes.
Delaware State of the Arts is a weekly podcast that presents interviews with arts organizations and leaders who contribute to the cultural vibrancy of communities throughout Delaware. Delaware State of the Arts is provided as a service of the Delaware Division of the Arts in partnership with News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV.
The Delaware Division of the Arts, a branch of the Delaware Department of State, is committed to supporting the arts and cultivating creativity to enhance the quality of life in Delaware. Together with its advisory body, the Delaware State Arts Council, the division administers grants and programs that support arts programming, educate the public, increase awareness of the arts, and integrate the arts into all facets of Delaware life. To find out more about the division, visit arts.delaware.gov.